Trigger warning. The following episode contains references to gore, sexual content, racism, slavery, human suffering, mental conditions, factual inaccuracies, several entitled people making light of all these things. If any of the aforementioned topics cause you discomfort, you may want to listen to a different episode.
Well, we had Watergate and Spygate, but Promulgate? No, thank you. I'm Andy.
Nothing says carefully considered like a 9-minute jury decision. I'm Kelly.
Oklahoma, where the law once prevented us from teaching the theory of evolution. I'm Adam.
Your Honor, in this suit against myself, I am clearly guilty, so if you'll just tell me where I can pick up my check, I'll be on my way. I'm Sean, and this is Acid Pop. Hello, everyone, and welcome back. Today, we're going to be talking about ridiculous lawsuits.
Ridiculous.
Hearsay.
So the word ridiculous is Latin, and it comes from ridiculous, which means laughable or silly. The verb version is ridio, meaning laugh or mock.
Ridio killed the radio star?
Mm-hmm.
I want to know the root word of redonkulous.
And then law comes from Old English lagu, which means ordinance. And suit comes from Latin sequi, which means to follow. Hmm. And it's the same root as sequence. And I guess for clothes, like a suit of clothes, it was called that because there was a certain order that you would put them on.
True of most clothes.
Yeah. Yes. That's why they're called suits, because it's an order.
So what I got from that is we have ridio legumes.
Yeah. Radioactive beans. That's what we're talking about today. And liticophobia is the fear of lawsuits.
Is this a one-way fear, or is it like...
Or like, I don't want to watch Judge Judy.
It's pretty much just people who are excessively careful in their everyday dealings to make sure that they don't get slapped with a lawsuit. Today, for our Acid Pop quiz, we're going to actually do things backwards. So we're going to warm up with our terms, because I just found some ridiculous words that lawyers like to use to try and make things sound fancier than they are.
Like objection.
So what is abecedarian?
That is the death spell in Harry Potter.
It sounds like a spell to summon an abacus.
the most boring magic.
Used by a lot of accountant wizards.
Abecedarian.
We've said it 3 times now.
All right, the evil mathematician have appeared.
Hey, it worked. Am I the only one who hasn't guessed?
Yep.
Sorry, I'm contemplating the word. It's kind of pretty.
It is. I keep thinking about it.
That is...
Romance languages.
That's just absence. Someone who's not there.
Good guess. Strangely, abecedarian means basic or fundamental.
Doesn't sound like it.
Simple.
Yeah, exactly. This is a really long way of saying obvious.
Which is like an abecitation, which is a dancing queen dolphin.
It's lawyer for duh.
Yeah. Here's a good one. What is a shibboleth?
That sounds like an H.P. Lovecraft monster.
Summon the shibboleth.
That's indescribable.
You know, I always felt like Lovecraft was cheating.
Yeah.
He's just like, oh, I saw something so scary, I can't even tell you how scary it was.
I described it by not describing it.
Just imagine like something real spooky. That's about it.
It's effective.
Is it?
It is. I just said it was.
Shibboleth. Shibboleth, shibboleth, shibboleth.
It is I,
again.
Somebody had to fight the mathematician.
It's kind of crowded in here.
Shibboleth is... That's a lawyer's briefcase. Okay, around the shibboleth.
Almost sounds like a Jewish word.
I did not look up the roots of any of these words.
Shibboleth, Your Honor.
I swear I know this word. I've heard it before. It's driving me... Oh.
Show off your fancy writing skills.
I'm not sure. I don't know it. It's embarrassing. I feel like it's either...
An upside down chicken.
I'm going to say it's like this is not correct, but what comes to mind is a pet peeve, like something that is a bone of contention.
No, a shibboleth is a place of origin. Huh. So your hometown is your shibboleth.
Goodness, that was not anywhere in my head.
How about promulgate?
What is with these words?
You know how lawyers do.
The promulgate's where the shibboleth comes out of.
Was it promulgate or probulgate?
P-R-O-M-U-L gate.
Promulgate.
It's the front door of the law house. The law house, that's what they call them.
Yes, sir.
I feel like a prommel is like, what's a pommel on a, isn't that on a sword?
It's, yeah.
Like, but it's shaped like a shrimp. And then promulgate involves some sort of scandal surrounding that.
You're one of those shrimp conspiracy theorists, are you?
You're both completely wrong, because Prommel is my shipping name for Patton and Rommel. And Promulgate was somebody was stealing somebody else's fan fiction about it.
Rommel, you go to prom with me.
I love the way you move your tanks.
Give Kelly a minute to pick herself up off the floor.
Andy, you make me so happy. So write that fic. Okay.
Just for you.
No, promulgate means to enact.
Which is okay, just a fancy word for to do.
Yeah. Yep.
Could you promulgate this?
What?
And our last word, impliedly.
That sounds like
honestly kind of hard to say.
It was made up.
It's the adverb form of implied.
Yeah, it has to be, right?
He said impliedly.
Are you going to use that in your fanfic?
Yes. Something about tank cannons.
There she goes again.
Something, something, tank cannons.
So hot.
I'd like to be on your African front.
Stop it. I have to come up with a stupid reading for impliedly.
Just piggyback on the one that we're doing. Yes. I don't see how it could possibly be anything
else. That's the adverb form implied.
Is that also Aunt Adam's guess?
Yes. Like, I don't see any other way around it.
I'm going to say it's the opposite. It's to be straightforward.
Mm. No, impliedly is a synonym for implicitly.
Mm.
Okay.
And the reasoning behind this one, I guess, is that implicitly has a connotation with meaning like 100% complete. You know, it's yeah, absolutely okay. That thing. But impliedly just is like mostly that thing. It's like a soft yes instead of a hard yes.
I'm going to give you a soft yes on this crime.
Yeah.
Put me down as a maybe.
I just like to point out that my job is quite literally to kill all of this language and rewrite things in a way that humans can understand. Yeah. I deal with our legal department. There is a lot of cutting.
To destroy the enemy, you have to understand the enemy.
Typically for our show, I try to include the whole world, but being an American that only speaks English, things get restricted by my biases a lot. In this episode, there wasn't really any help for it. Pretty much every story we're going to talk about came from the U.S., and it's just because this is an excruciatingly litigious country. So
yes,
we're just going to talk a little bit about how much. So how many lawsuits are filed in the U.S. each year?
Each year.
How many people are there?
There are 325 million.
Are you saying because I'm not filing any, somebody else is filing too?
Yes, that's how it works. One of them is at you for not filing lawsuits.
I'm going to say 1 million.
Nah, let's go with 16 million.
I feel like 1 million feels pretty good. I'm going to say 1.5.
Andy is the closest without going over. It is 40 million.
But like half of those are that just this one guy who's bored.
Mm-hmm.
We're not even counting all the people that have told me that they're going to sue me for not discounting an item at a store. Or...
Oh, no, those are part of it.
Oh, no, I've been sued.
So as I mentioned, America has 325 million people and there are over 7 billion people in the world, which means America makes up 4.4% roughly of the population of the world. What percentage of the world's lawyers live in America?
It's still got to be kind of low, though, right? There's lots of other lawyers.
Mm-hmm. We are all lawyers in some way.
Yeah, but if you're in England, you have to wear those funny wigs.
Yeah, that's just a selling point.
I could not watch the English Law and Order. It was
I have no interest to be a lawyer in America, but I have more of an interest to be a lawyer in England.
I could just get you one of those wigs.
Wait for his birthday.
Yeah, I mean, that's a start.
Search up. It's very close. Adam's going to get so many powdered wigs.
I'm going to say 25%.
15.
50.
The correct answer is 70.
70?
What?
Yes!
Yep.
Objection.
I'm gonna sue you!
There's probably some countries without lawyers.
Yeah. Or one for the whole country. He's a very busy man.
He has to play both sides of the court.
Yeah. So what was the most expensive settlement ever?
I feel like those have gone into the billions.
Jonestown. Yeah, I mean, I feel like it has to be in the billions, right?
Could be.
How much was that McDonald's lady paid for her hot coffee crotch?
Not a lot. It was a few hundred thousand.
I'm going to say 500 million.
Oof. See, I'm not comfortable going on billions. I'm going to say, I'm going lower than Adam. 350 million.
Yeah. Sometimes, like, the government sues people.
Uh-huh.
Corporations, and they have to pay over damages.
Mm-hmm.
And I swear I saw something just today about a lawsuit that was over $1 billion. So I'm going to say 15 billion.
Well, Kelly is the closest without going over.
Oh, damn.
And she's correct. Sometimes the government does sue people. And as you may or may not know, every state in the U.S. has its own government. And sometimes they all team up to sue one thing. So in 1998, the four largest tobacco companies agreed to pay damages to all the states in the U.S. to cover medical costs resulting from smoking.
I remember that.
They also agreed to fund anti-smoking groups. The amount agreed to was $206 billion to be paid over the next 25 years.
How's that working for us?
I don't know.
Well, we've moved to e-cigarettes.
Yeah.
We've done research into vaping instead. Is that cool?
So what is the record number of lawsuits filed by a single person?
I feel like I watched like a 60 Minutes on this lady when I was a kid and it frightened me a lot. Yeah. I'm going up in the hundreds of thousands. Let's say 350,000 again. Let's hedge our bets on that number.
10,000.
I feel like you only have so much time in the day.
Yeah. I don't know if I have 350,000 minutes in my life.
Now, let's say you win one of those suits. You can hire a lawyer to just do it for you. And you win one of those, hire another lawyer to sue that lawyer for not doing good enough.
Hire a bunch of frivolous lawyers.
I'm going to do 70,000.
Well, you guys were a bit high, but let me tell you the story of this person. In the early 2000s, Jonathan Lee Riches, ironically, was one of the pioneers of the phishing scheme. He potentially stole millions of dollars, but he was eventually caught and sentenced to 10 years in prison. Once there, he filed a suit to return several pieces of confiscated property. A judge decided to have them all donated to Goodwill. This started a snowball as Riches began to sue more and more people for more and more things. The people he had attempted to implicate in his incarceration included Brad Pitt, Meals on Wheels, and Pope.
What?
His early lawsuits were thrown out because he did not pay the $250 filing fee, but he successfully argued that he did not make enough money to pay this fee and continued to file suit after suit. When an injunction was filed against Riches to stop his endless flow of lawsuits, he adopted several aliases and sued Hulk Hogan as the source of his injustice.
What?
I finally figured it out.
Put you in jail, brother.
His endless stream of ridiculous lawsuits made him a brief and moderate internet celebrity. And when he was released in 2012, he tried to capitalize on his, quote, fame, unquote. This did not pan out, and he soon found himself back in jail for breaking the rules of his parole. All in all, he has filed over 3,000 lawsuits so far and is a Guinness Book World Record holder for the most litigious man.
Is that a record you want?
Well, he promptly sued Guinness for slanderizing his name and underestimating his achievement.
That's in fitting with his character.
So we're going to move on to our true-false section. So I'm going to basically describe to you a lawsuit, and you're going to decide if this lawsuit, if they were successful in their suit or not. And you have one bonus point that you can use somewhere along the way here, because one of these is a made-up story. And if you can correctly identify that one, you get bonus points. But you only get one guess at that.
And remember, the points don't matter.
Yes.
I've been keeping meticulous score from every episode, trying to decide which of you I like the best.
You should see our walls.
On our final episode, we're going to tally them up.
In 2005, Judge Ron L. Pearson Jr. took his pants to the dry cleaners. When he came back to collect them, they were missing. The pants had been sent to the wrong location, but they were shortly tracked down and returned to Judge Jr. However, Judge Jr. refused to accept the pants and sued the dry cleaners for $67 million, claiming that the business had failed to honor their satisfaction guaranteed sign in the window. Did Judge Jr. win his case?
No.
I have a couple questions.
Uh-huh.
Can you win a case but not be rewarded what you were asking?
Yes, absolutely.
That's what I thought.
I'm still saying no. And screw you, Judge Jr.
Is he actually a judge? Or is his name Judge?
He was a judge.
Okay.
Oh, it's not like Judge Reinhold.
No. He was a lawful judge, Judge Jr.
Lawful good judge.
If he doesn't have to get what he asked for, I'm going to say yes.
Yes.
Just like that. Yes.
I'm also going to say he won because he's a judge.
Well, luckily, he couldn't go to himself for a ruling. So.
He brings his own gavel into the dry cleaner.
Guilty!
No, Judge Jr. did not win his case.
But it was real.
It was real. Also, Judge Jr.'s term expired in 2007, and he was not reappointed. He sued the city for wrongful termination, but that case was also lost.
Stop it!
Good
You're
judge.
A judge. You should know better.
Good judge, bad lawyer.
So in 2003, Richard Schick robbed a convenience store using a sawed-off shotgun. Schick was apprehended and sentenced to 10 years in jail. While in jail, Schick filed a lawsuit against his former employer, claiming that they had failed to adequately provide for his disabilities and that he was sexually discriminated against. These factors drove him to armed robbery. Did he win his case?
Ooh.
See, he could win his case without, like, having to... Like, he could have been sexually discriminated against and prove that.
But his point was that these factors drove him to rob the...
Okay, so he was making that specific argument.
Yeah.
I'm going to say he lost.
Now I'm going to go with a big win for this one.
Don't ask me to choose between you two. I'm going to say he lost.
Schick did win his case.
Yeah.
Kelly, you're leading me astray every time.
While Schick was still forced to serve out his 10-year sentence for armed robbery, he received over $300,000 in back pay and damages.
Yeah.
In 1980, Tim Horan was a professional hot air balloonist, and he agreed to do a promo for Fred Jessup in exchange for cleaning his balloon. And that was not
that
was not an innuendo. Jessup had a friend who worked at a local hospital and agreed to let the men use one of the industrial-sized washing and drying machines to clean the balloon. The men successfully washed the balloon, but when they put it in the dryer, it rumbled and shook violently. They pulled and tugged at the balloon a few times to get the load balanced and finally got it running smoothly. Then the dryer exploded. The two men were blasted with shrapnel and nearly lost limbs in the incident. They subsequently sued the dryer manufacturers. Did they win?
Yes, they won. I feel confident in this one.
I'm going to go with no because they were using it improperly.
Every time I've said the same thing as Kelly, it's been wrong.
I'm often wrong.
I'm going to say no.
Yes, they did win.
Damn it. All right. Adam is the kiss of death.
You answered first.
The dryer manufacturer paid the men $1.25 million for their injuries because the dryer was designed to handle loads of up to 2,000 pounds and the balloon weighed only 128 pounds.
Yeah, it's a reasonable lawsuit, I'd say.
What would you wash that's 2,000 pounds?
Well, it was just like the linens from the entire floor of a hospital.
Okay. Diapies.
One diaper, a very, very full diaper.
Don't put it in the washer full. It's going to ruin your washer.
No, the water will take it away.
So in 1996, Larry Ruttman got a shiny new boomerang, and he took it out for a test drive.
This one sounds fake, too.
After throwing the boomerang, it swiftly looped back around and hit Mr. Ruttman in the back of the head. Mr. Ruttman then sued himself for $300,000 and claimed that his insurance company was responsible for the full amount. Did he win his suit?
Okay.
I'm really rooting for you, little guy, but
I'm going to say yes.
No, it's clever in a weird way.
Like, I feel like that's one that all the judges would have to huddle up and, like, check the rule book of laws. Like, there's nothing in here about that.
Yeah, I mean, I know insurance companies
can be a lawyer.
Often require lawsuits to reward damages. So I'm going to say that this one really happened, but he did not win.
He did win his lawsuit. And he won the full amount, $300,000.
Which his insurance paid to him?
Yep.
I have been very, very inappropriate with this boomerang. Give me money.
That opened up a whole new world for me.
I feel like now every insurance company has like in the thousands of pages that you don't read, it's like also
can't sue yourself.
Yeah. So in 1996, Thomas Passmore was working on a construction site when he thought he saw the number 666 appear on his right hand. Believing that his hand had become possessed with the devil, Passmore grabbed a circular saw and cut off the evil appendage.
It's the only way to be sure.
Passmore was rushed to the hospital, but refused to let doctors reattach any hand what has the devil living in it.
Give me a different one.
After arguing with Passmore for longer than he should have, the attending surgeon called a judge and asked for legal advice. The judge told him that if he reattached the limb against Passmore's will, he would be opening himself up to a lawsuit. So the physician closed the wound and called it a day. Soon after, Passmore sued the surgeon for $3 million, claiming that he was clearly psychotic at the time and the surgeon should have known better. Did he win his case?
I'm going to say no. Like, a judge kind of already ruled on it.
Absolutely. If he won, I'm going to be very upset with this legal system. I'm going to burn the whole thing down.
And I'm going to be a pessimist and say he won.
No, the juror sided with the surgeon.
That's good. Can I now guess which one I think is fake?
Yeah, so let's go back through them.
Of them sound fake.
The missing pants for $67 million. The robbing a store due to sexual harassment for $300,000. Washing a balloon and making a dryer explode for $1.25 million. Hitting yourself in the head with a boomerang for $300,000. And sawing off your own hand and being pissed when someone didn't reattach it when you told them not to for $3 million.
I'm going balloon.
See, I feel like the one that sounds like the thing people want to be angry about on the internet is the robbing the store. So I think it's that one.
Let's go with boomerangs. Nobody can get those things to come back anyways.
Oh, Adam got it.
Yeah.
So yeah, when I was doing the research for this episode, there were lists upon lists of ridiculous lawsuits that if you look into them, even a tiny bit, you find out that they're made up stories or ridiculously exaggerated stories. This story about the boomerang appeared on the cover of World Inquirer. So,
it was Bat Boy.
So you're saying there was a reliable primary source?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wait, the story about the guy who cut off his own hand is real.
That's a real story, but he didn't win.
Yeah, take solace in that.
People do split from reality sometimes.
Yeah. So we're going to move on to our stories, and we're going to start with a story that came out of the American Civil War. So this is one of those wars that I have a hard time wrapping my brain around. The fact that a significant chunk of our country felt strongly enough about keeping other humans as property is a concept that I'll never be able to understand. Luckily, coming out of that, we got the 13th Amendment, which abolished slavery in 1865, and the 14th Amendment, which gave every American equal rights. But to say that the Confederates were sore losers is putting it mildly. They tried to exploit every loophole they could to regain what they felt to be the status quo.
And succeeded.
Yeah, a lot of time.
And they truly did. Yeah, a lot.
In 1890, Louisiana passed the Separate Car Act, which basically said that white people and black people were required to ride in separate, but equal, no seriously, equal, quit laughing, we mean it, train cars. People quickly saw this for the bullshit that it was and tried to bring it down. A plan was formed to show how ridiculous this law was. A group of concerned citizens found Homer Plessy, a man who was 1/8 black and therefore could not ride in the white train car, and they convinced him to buy a ticket for the white train cars. The plan was basically to have him walk up and loudly say, "Hello, I'm a black man, and I would like to buy a ticket to the white train." He did, and he was promptly arrested. And then he sued the state.
He was arrested just for asking to buy one?
Yeah, for trying to buy a ticket. He sued the state, and Plessy and his team of lawyers argued that not being allowed on the train violated the 13th and 14th Amendment. A judge ruled that the separate but equal laws did not violate these amendments. Plessy took the case to the state Supreme Court, and that judge upheld the ruling. Plessy took the case to the U.S. Supreme Court, and in 1896, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that this law was totally okay and not in any way a problem.
Way to go, guys.
Yeah, the U.S. Supreme Court has sucked at different periods of time. They're just like, yeah, all of you people, do you guys want rights?
Took us a while to get to Brown and the Board of Education.
Yeah. In this ruling, one judge abstained, one voted no, and seven voted yes. This started a precedent that has snowballed bullshit for the next 60 years. And that continued on until Brown versus Board of Education in 1954. In this case, stated that separate schools for white and black students were regoddamn-diculous. And when it made its way to the Supreme Court, it was supported 9-0.
That's the problem with legal precedents.
Yeah.
We agreed that this was true at one point, so it must always be true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's kind of like, these are the best amendments ever, and nobody can ever stop us. Like,
we will never change our minds.
That seems to be the idea.
Yeah.
I think the girl who was the one that they were suing to be able to attend the school, she passed away relatively recently.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, really?
Like, one of the things we lose track of is how recent some of this stuff was. Yeah.
It's pretty ridiculous.
I just did a whole American history course, and not only does, like, you get into that section of American history, you're like, what the fuck? But it's also, you're like, wait a minute, that was, like, so not far away from where I am right now.
And that's why so few people want to be time travelers.
So next, we're going to talk about the state of Tennessee versus John Thomas Scopes. So this all started in 1925 when Tennessee passed a law that prohibited the teaching of evolution in schools in favor of teaching the biblical account of mankind's origins.
Which is, poof, you're here.
Yeah. John Scopes was a substitute teacher who volunteered to teach evolution to a class, deliberately breaking this law. Scopes then sued the state of Tennessee on the grounds that the law violated teachers' rights of academic freedom and were therefore unconstitutional. This whole thing was really just an exercise to make a point, but it blew way out of proportion.
They called it the monkey trial, right?
Yep, the Scopes monkey trial. The original prosecuting lawyer was replaced with William Jennings Bryan, a three-time presidential candidate and secretary of the state under Woodrow Wilson.
Who was a wonderful president.
This guy was a staunch creationist. So in response, famous defense lawyer Clarence Darrow was called to speak on behalf of Scopes. The trial gained national attention.
Both sides are bringing out their heavy hitters.
Yeah, exactly. And they hadn't intended to at the start. Things just kept escalating. So the trial gained national attention and was seen as a pivotal moment in American history. Both lawyers vehemently stated their case, and things got pretty heated. On the seventh day of the trial, the judge finally brought the case to a close when Darrow and Bryan had basically resorted to shouting insults at each other. After all that, the jury debated for 9 minutes before finding Scopes guilty.
Hooray.
Scopes was fined $100, approximately $1,300 today, and when invited to make a closing statement, he said, "Your Honor, I feel that I have been convicted of violating an unjust statute. I will continue in the future, as I have in the past, to oppose this law in every way I can. Any other action would be in violation of my ideals of academic freedom, that is, to teach the truth, as guaranteed in our Constitution, of personal and religious freedom. I think that this fine is unjust."
Then he gave him the bird.
Boom!
Moonwalked out of there.
Having left his all in the court, Bryan died 5 days after the closing of the trial.
Oh,
and
damn.
In the aftermath that followed, the gloves basically officially came off in the evolution versus creationism debate, and the war has raged ever since.
What year was this?
This was in 1925. But bills similar to the one that Tennessee passed have successfully passed in Oklahoma, New Mexico, Florida, Louisiana, and Missouri as late as 2008, though most of these were repealed within months of passing.
Some of these have been like side-by-side bills, or are they specifically creationism only?
They're different things of different levels, but it's all basically to restrict in some way the teaching of evolution in school.
Say, this is a theory. We have only some evidence. We're not sure it's true.
You're killing me.
Yeah. Make your science teachers lie to their students, folks.
Well, and it's one of those things where I read about these sorts of things happening. I'm like, oh, good, you're wasting money.
Yeah. Way to set us all back.
So we're going to end today with an amazing story of a lawsuit. I double checked, triple checked, and quadruple checked this story to find out if it was true, because I just couldn't believe it. So I hope that it's true in one way, just because everything says that it is. But in other ways, I still kind of don't believe it.
It's about a unicorn suing a leprechaun.
Don't spoil it.
You've stolen all my colors for your rainbow.
So this took place in Portland, Oregon in 2012. An unnamed John had just finished having sex with a prostitute when he tried to leave without paying. The prostitute's pimp, Sergio Clardry, pursued the man, threw him to the ground, and curb stomped his face for a while.
Ah!
Clardy went to jail, and the John received plastic surgery to put his face back together again. Clardy was sentenced to 100 years in prison less than a year later, and that's when Clardy decided to seek justice against the true villains. Clardy filed a $100 million suit against Nike Shoes because they did not adequately warn him of the potential of severely hurting someone whilst stomping on their face.
This should be on the warning label or something.
Hey, these Jordans are supposed to pump up. All that extra air cushions, right?
Amazingly, the case made it to court. Clardy could not convince a lawyer to speak on his behalf and could not get one assigned because this was not a criminal case. It was a civil case. And he basically just rambled at the judge for 23 minutes. And one of the three present defending lawyers for Nike spoke for 90 seconds. The case was thrown out and Clardy went back to jail.
I can believe this happened.
Oh, yeah.
I can definitely believe this happened. It seems like one of those things where it's like, oh, man, I know I screwed up, but how do I get something out of this?
I need to save face somehow.
Well, you didn't save that guy's face.
What I learned from some of the other stories is like winning one of these cases for money doesn't really do anything to shorten your jail time. And it's like, can you buy anything in prison with $100 million? Like, I don't understand how this is going
to
improve
your
situation.
I think you can give it to family.
I guess.
You could pay off the guards.
I just hope that poor woman got paid at some point. I mean, that's theft.
Yeah. So that's all the stories I had. Anybody have any personal stories involving lawsuits?
I've never been sued. Like I said, I work retail, so I've been threatened to be sued a lot.
Really? Yeah. People threaten to sue you?
When I worked for the phone store, a lady came in and saw that we had one of those like pay-as-you-go phones. And she looked at the phone, looked at the picture of a man holding a phone on the advertisement for pay-as-you-go phones, and said, well, this is just false advertisement. Do you guys have that phone right there? Who are you for this? I said, that's not how false advertising works at all.
Yeah, probably my most famous story about someone threatening to sue me was when I worked at a bookstore. And when I worked at the bookstore, customers had this racket that they would do where they would basically buy one of the big expensive computer books that were like $150 a piece, and they would take them home, scan every page of the book, and then bring it back and return it within the 30-day return policy, and then use that store credit to buy another book and do the same thing. Yeah. And so they basically put down a $150 deposit that let them check out as many books as they wanted from our store. We've been trying for a long time to figure out a way to get people to stop doing this. And finally, what the company decided to do was just shorten the window of returns from 30 days to 15 days. When this was going to happen, we had signs up all over the place for like 6 months. Like, you couldn't look at a surface in this store without being warned that the return policy was changing. And I had a woman, and these people did this once a month because they had to come in before, you know, their return expired. So I had a woman come in, you know, easily 5 times while these signs were up. So she finally came in for the first time after the policy changed over, and it was like 18 days after she bought the book. And I was like, I'm sorry, you can't return it. It's not in our return policy anymore. It's after 15 days. And she was livid, like practically crawling over the counters to strangle me because I would not return her book. And I was like, we've had signs up. It's on the receipt that you're holding right now. Like everything says you have to do it in 15 days. It's after 15 days. I'm not going to take the book back. She's like, well, I'm going to call the police then. I was like, okay, you have fun. And so she whipped out her phone and called up the police and I just left her to it. And the police came down. I just gave her her space because I didn't want the situation to escalate. And she just I could see her from where she was standing, just like pointing at me and shouting and pointing at the officer and pointing back at me. And this went on for several minutes. And finally, the officer called me over and he's like, what's going on here? I was like, she's trying to return a book that she bought 18 days ago. And our return policy says you have to return it within 15 days. And he looks at the lady's like, that's not against the law. And she's like, well, I'm going to sue this place then. And just like stormed away. And that was the last time I ever saw her.
Never heard about any lawsuits, though.
Yep.
See, that's always the way it is. When I worked like a small local video game store, and we had a thing where you could try any game. We had all the systems and you could try the games before you bought them in store. And the thing was, like, since you were supposed to be able to try it, you weren't supposed to be able to return it. But we really didn't. Like, if you didn't like your game, I'd always return it and for store credit.
Yeah.
For like what you paid for it, like trade in. And there was one kid who his dad constantly came and would drop him off for several hours and then go grocery shopping or do whatever he did. And the kid would try out all these games and he'd usually end up buying a $5 game.
Yeah.
One time he picked out the Xbox 360 game Chrome Hounds, which was pretty much an online only mech game. It had a single player. It sucked.
Yeah.
I said, are you sure you want to get this? And at this point, I was already fed up with this guy because I'm not his kid's babysitter.
Right. Yeah.
Because I will not allow you to return it if you do not like it. And he was like, no, I'm fine. I'm like, okay. Several days later, the kid comes back in. And I said, oh, and he's got the game in hand. I'm like,
rolled up your sleeves.
Well, to which his response was, yeah, this doesn't work. I was like, well, let me go get another copy for you.
That's always a good response to that. Let me just go ahead and replace
that. He goes, no, I just want to return it. I was like, oh, unfortunately, if it says right there on your receipt, there's no return since you tried it before you bought it. He walks outside. 15 minutes later, his dad comes in and is like, what the hell is this? Where is this policy? I was like, it's right here and here and on your receipt.
In here.
And he started doing this thing where he's like, I am going to go get my lawyer and we will sue this place. But he was walking out like backwards, pointing his finger ominously. and he was like, and I spend a lot of money. I spend a lot of money and we'll never spend money here again. I was like, sorry, I told your kid.
Okay, bye.
And like the ending thing was, oh, you'll be hearing from me as he like slowly went out the door with his finger pointing at me.
I like how melodramatic he got. You will rue the day.
Well, I've had that before where like a guy at the phone store, a guy was yelling that he was going to sue us because we wouldn't transfer his contacts to another phone that he didn't buy from us. And then as he, and I was like, sorry, sir, like you didn't buy that here. We're not transferring that. It's $20. Starts cursing, starts leaving, turns around and whips his new BlackBerry at the door. But it hits like the metal part in the middle of the glass doors and goes, to which like his response was golden. He just sadly picked up the pieces of his phone and left.
What else can you do at that point?
Well, yep. As though to say, oh, I've done it again.
I do remember a situation once when I worked at the movie theater that this person probably legitimately could have sued us, and they didn't, which I am forever grateful for. So I don't know if you've ever been to a movie theater, but they've got those big popcorn poppers, and they have to get cleaned every night, and it basically requires you to like unbolt the whole thing and get it all the guts so you can clean it out real good and then put it back together the next day. Well, it turned out that when someone was putting it back together the night before, they hadn't fastened on one of the bolts quite well enough. So then in one of the batches of popcorn, a big wing nut fell into the bag.
Ooh.
And I was working behind the counter and somebody came up and they're like, I found a wing nut in my popcorn. And they just like plunked it down into my hand. And I just stood there as just like all these headlines flashed behind my eyes of all the ways this could go wrong. And I didn't say anything. Like I couldn't even respond. I was just like, and they just went, just so you know, and just walked away. And I never saw them again.
Documentary, sir.
Oh, no, it's Wingnut Day here.
I remember I found a box staple in a salad that I had at a buffet here in town once.
Man, that was a whole thing.
Yeah. And, like, I brought it to the attention of one of the servers, like, hey, I found this in my salad, just so you know. And, like, it became this huge thing where they thought I was trying to get, like, a free meal and accuse me of lying about it.
Yeah, they brought him back to the security office and everything, didn't they?
Yeah, like, all, like the manager got involved and like one of their in-house security guys. And I was just pointing it out just in case they had any more staples in their salads.
You might want to sift this better.
get a magnet.
It was at a buffet. And then like we were all going to go out to the arcade and in the casino. It's like, where's Adam? Like, oh, he got taken away by security.
That's one way to deal with complaints. You just never see that person again.
Yeah, you know. Just make it disappear.
All right. Well, if nobody has any more stories, then we're going to move on to what are your morals worth? So here's the deal. You're walking into a restaurant and it's lunchtime at the 3rd annual lawyers convention. As you walk into this restaurant, you slip and fall and hurt yourself. And
oh, God.
You are guaranteed by the lawyers to win a suit for $100,000. How bad of an injury do you feel you need to obtain to justify this lawsuit?
But they've already said I'm guaranteed.
Well, yeah, but we're rolling the tape back here in this hypothetical situation. So how badly would you have to hurt yourself to feel like you were justified in hearing those words?
I'd have to break something.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it would have to put me in some way seriously out of commission for a while.
Yeah.
Like if that's just a hand, a foot, or like.
Okay. A couple questions about this scenario.
Mm-hmm.
Is this a locally owned restaurant or a chain?
This is a small local restaurant and it will probably shut down as a result of this lawsuit.
What kind of food do they serve?
It's a Thai restaurant.
Mm.
I love my Thai restaurant.
I love my Thai restaurant.
And they are at fault. There's something that caused me to slip and fall that they...
Yeah.
Okay.
Whole bowl of coconut curry just sitting on the ground.
And when I look up for my injury on the ground, is like the owner of the restaurant like laughing at me?
Gotcha!
Now you see him trying to dispose of a box of banana peels.
I'd have to like break something enough to have like a cast or be in like super serious pain.
Yeah, like a neck brace or something.
Because I do like local restaurant.
I think like a, like not like a serious like compound fracture, not like a bone sticking out of the skin, but like a hairline fracture.
Yeah.
Puts me in like a cast or something just for maybe, I don't know how long that takes, a couple months.
Can I get the lawyer to tone it down or is he overzealous?
Now this is the suit.
Does he make a scene?
They all make a scene.
For $100,000.
Yeah, it's going to have to be more than a hairline fracture because I break my elbows just looking at them sometimes. So I can hardly hold the restaurant responsible for that.
Suing them for your own brittle bone disease.
I'm going to say I have to break a serious bone.
Yeah.
And it has to require like setting.
Like your spine?
Well, a femur or a tibia or something would be fine.
Big thick bone?
Yeah, a thick bone, something that they have to set, something that I have to be in a hard cast, not a soft cast.
Yeah. So three broken bones then, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, see me, I don't think a broken bone is quite enough. If I broke a bone and 3 months later I was okay, I don't feel like that's worth $100,000. But if I broke a bone and I like had a limp for the rest of my life, I feel like that's worth more than $100,000. Yeah. So that's not going to do it.
But
so I think
like I've never broken a bone, so it's hard for me to gauge.
Yeah. So I think the only thing that would do it for me is a pretty serious concussion, like maybe some short-term memory loss, a few weeks of really bad headaches, like
something like what my friend had.
Yeah, something like that.
Where am I and why do I have a lawyer's card?
Yeah, I think that it would have to get that high before I'd be willing to take out that suit.
I actually got $1,000 from an insurance company once for telling them I didn't have a serious concussion.
Yeah.
We were in a car accident and I bumped my head and I did get a concussion, but it was really mild. And they pretty much sent me a piece of paper that I had to sign saying my head was fine and I would not pursue further legal action. And in return, they cut me a $1,000 check. I was like, this seems good to me.
Oh, man, just think about it, though, like slipping in a restaurant full of lawyers. I feel like the prettiest girl at the luncheon.
Yeah, I feel at that point you've already been devoured.
You're just ripping things off of you. Fine.
Is there bruising?
There could be.
I smell emotional trauma.
Crowd surf you over to the head of the table where there's a man sitting there like, yes, yes.
All right. Well, I think that's all we've got for this week. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you next time. Thanks to my co-hosts, and thank you so much for tuning in today. If you would like more information about today's episode, check out our website at acidpoppodcast.podbean.com.
You can also find us on Twitter at AcidPopPodcast and contact us at acidpoppodcast@gmail.com. Be sure to like, subscribe, and give us all the stars you can. Stay safe out there, and we'll see you next week.